Welcome to Jay's Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. I'm Sho Ali, flying solo today as the Blue Jays win in unlikely fashion. They were trailing 10-5 and win this one 11-10 as we continue, people, to ride the Blue Jays roller coaster. I hope you took the over on total runs scored as a 1.5-legged George Springer providing the dramatics late. Imagine Springer with 2 fully healthy legs. My goodness, right? That's why you pay a guy $150 million, and that's why he was playing today. I know we can, you know, complain about him not being great because of the injury, but still, that's what you get. Funnily enough, the last time we got the Springer theatrics was on August 8th. After Springer cleaned up a 10-hit, 7-earned-run mess from Hyunjin Ryu. So if you didn't believe time is a flat circle, I sure hope you believe it now. And in case you're curious about the wildcard standings, Blue Jays now officially tied with the Yankees at 78-63, their record on the year. So they are officially tied with the Yanks for the second wild card spot, though the Yankees are in action right now against the New York Mets in the Subway Series, so we'll monitor that one for you going forward. We'll quickly step aside, but time for you to get your text in at 590-590, name and location. We can always give you a shout out on the air. We got to all of your texts after the break. Again, 8:35 p.m. Eastern, first pitch. MLB.com's Keegan Mathison set to join me from Camden Yards in a few minutes' time. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about George Springer. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about Hyunjin Ryu, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about the managerial decisions of Charlie Montoyo tonight. But you're listening to Jay Stock, Sho Ali with you. Again, text us, 590-590, name and location, please. Jay Stock will continue after this on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jay's Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. I'm Sho Ali, flying solo today. As again, the Blue Jays win in unlikely fashion. Again, they were trailing 10-5 at one point in this game, and they win 11-10. As again, as I've said to you guys before, the highs and lows of being a sports fan, being a baseball fan, being a Blue Jays fan, we are all still riding the Blue Jays roller coaster. They win it 11-10 today. George Springer providing the dramatics, the theatrics late. I don't want to say a one-legged George Springer, but yeah, one and a half-legged George Springer. The man is clearly not fully healthy, but he is still gutting things out. It was funny. Again, you can always text us at 590-590. Name and location. I see a whole bunch of your texts here, okay? I see Matthew in Brantford, DB in London, Sharon in Coquitlam. Pardon me, Sharon, but someone had texted in earlier. I think it was Jason in Thornhill. And I'm not calling you out, Jason, because you know what? I actually thought this was a relatively valid take. Earlier in the game, I want to say around like 5 o'clock or so, 5 o'clock Eastern, because this game started at 4 p.m. Eastern. Jason had texted in to say, hey, Sho, Springer is an automatic out right now playing on one leg. I admire the desire to play. It's hurting the team. Who is making that call for him to play? And you know what? I was going to reply to Jason after the game had the Blue Jays lost 10-5 or 10-6 or whatever they may have lost as. And I was going to reply to him and say, you know what? I kind of agree with you. Josh and I talked about this last night. Maybe Bo Bichette should be the guy leading off after this, after what we saw from him out of the leadoff spot against the New York Yankees. Right? That's kind of what was going to be my response. And you know what? Credit to you, Jason, because he texted back after the end of the game to say, what do I know? Go Jays. So there you go. So what do any of us know really at any point? Because as we keep on talking about the crazy amount of variance that is present when it comes to baseball over virtually any other sport you can readily availably watch in North America. I mean, I would challenge you to find one that has more variance than this one. So there you go, right? But again, you can text us at 590-590, name and location, please. Blue Jays also getting home runs from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., his 43rd of the season. Another Lourdes Gurriel Jr. shot after he got bodied last night, so he's clearly fine, right? He provided an RBI single as well in the top of the seventh. And, you know, that I feel like he kind of got let off the hook for that because his base running after that left a little bit to be desired. He clearly thought that was a game-tying three-run jack he hit in the top of the seventh inning, because had he kept running, he would have easily made it to second. And then, of course, he was lifted for Jerod Dyson. And on the following RBI, I believe it was a sac fly from Jake Lamb, Dyson, probably beating the speedy guy he is, would have tagged and made it to third. You know what? The point is moot in the end because George Springer hit a two-run bomb, and the Blue Jays win it 11-10. And I mentioned Jake Lamb. He also slapped home a few runs. He gets an RBI single and a sac fly. But let's bring in my pal from MLB.com, Keegan Mathison. Keegan, how's it going, man?
Doing well, Sho. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. What's the heart rate on everyone, you think, at Camden Yards in Blue Jays land after witnessing what we all just witnessed and what we all heard?
Man, oh man, can I interest you in a story about how the Blue Jays lost 10-7 and it was a messy game? Because I've got one here. I tell you, that was an amazing comeback at the end to salvage that, because not only a long game, a lot of offense on either side, but a one that the Blue Jays had a dozen opportunities to jump ahead of early, but they do it late. When they pull this off, it's always going to be that offense, you know, making something amazing happen at the end. And this time it's George Springer, you know, with another one of those big moments. This has been an exciting run. It's not getting any quieter now, and just an incredible, incredible seventh inning.
Yeah, absolutely. What theatrics? You can't write that for a movie better than TIFF is going on right now. VIFF, Vancouver International Film Festival, that's going to be going on very shortly. You can't find better stories over there than you can watching the Toronto Blue Jays right now, Keegan. Absolutely crazy stuff as the Blue Jays again win 11-10 over the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards. George Springer with a two-run jack in the top of the seventh inning, and the Orioles get shut down by Romano in the bottom of the seventh inning. All right, let's talk about George Springer a little bit more, Keegan. I mean, the guy is clearly not healthy, right? He's clearly not 100%. Seems to be playing on one and a half legs, as I've been saying tonight. But I mean, this is the reason you pay a guy $150 million. Like, I know there is some concern that he maybe he's like, you know, exacerbating things because he's playing injured or what have you. But are you all that concerned? I know it's like super, super easy hindsight because he just, you know, provided another amazing moment in a really wild topsy-turvy Blue Jays season. But what do you make of him playing, essentially gutting out these games, playing on one leg?
It's admirable what he's doing right now. He certainly looked a lot healthier, even in the early innings today. You know, I don't want to get too reactionary into every time he runs up the line, but seeing him running in New York before he fouled that ball off his knee was just uncomfortable, like really uncomfortable to watch. You could tell that he was barely able to be on the field. A couple of times he would drop to a knee. He's using his bat as a crutch to get up. That's just not a healthy player at all. He looked more normal on the field today, which is all you can hope for. And, you know, what he's doing right now is very impressive. And if he can continue to do this, just stay at the DH position for now, I think that's good enough, you know, for the Blue Jays. Getting that bat in the lineup at the top, because like you said, there is a reason that you go out and give a guy the biggest contract in the history of your organization. And it's for moments like that. It's for a bat like that for Springer. And, you know, ideally he stays this way. You know, going back to a week ago, Charlie Montoyo said it's an injury that won't get made any worse by playing. And you know what an optimist I am, Show. I'm always, quite worried something will get worse. But it's that's what the Blue Jays are saying about this knee injury. So as long as it's just pain management, you can deal with that. As long as there's no threat of anything getting worse, you can go day to day. If he needs a day off a week, sure, you give it to him. You get Alejandro Kirk in as the DH. That's just fine. But for now, big moments, and it's impressive to watch what he's doing.
Do you think we see at any point here, and I'm chatting with MLB.com's Keegan Matheson, do you think we see at any point before the end of the season, and dare I say, if the Blue Jays do make it to a playoff spot, but that's a further conversation, but at the very least for the last 20-something games we got going on here for the rest of the regular season, does George Springer play outfield at any point, or do you think he's basically going to be, the games he does play, he's going to be the DH going forward?
Yeah, right now I don't think so, you know, just given how he's been moving around and the risk that's involved in that. But once you're getting closer to the playoff, Show, let's say the Blue Jays have a 2 or 3 game cushion. Do you try that out for a game at the end, or is that too risky? Do you want to throw him into the outfield just for the playoffs after a month away from him? That's really getting into some new territory for the Blue Jays. So right now, on the safe side, I wouldn't expect to see him out there. Certainly not impossible by any means. This is not a 0% thing whatsoever. But where he's at right now, I think the focus has to be just getting him in the lineup regularly. And that's been the case the last couple of days. But, you know, you need to see that for a week or a couple of weeks straight, really, before it's something you consider safe and really steady. But getting back into the outfield, I think that's pretty far down the line.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Chatting with Keegan Matheson here from MLB.com. We always like to solicit texts here on JStock, Keegan. And someone texted in, no name on this one, but please provide your name if you can, because I like giving everyone shout-outs. But this person texting in to see, say, it's nice to see Springer come through. Felt like I was watching The Natural, which great reference there. Robert Redford starring in that one, if I recall correctly. But again, chatting with Keegan Matheson here. I want to ask you about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. He has been absolutely just on a real tear, basically over the last month and a bit. And you know what? Like I said off the top of the program, sure, you can criticize the guy a teensy bit because he clearly thought his hit in the top of the seventh inning was gone, right? He clearly thought that was a three-run jack. He was kind of admiring it as he ran around the bases. And then as the ball dropped back into the outfield, he kind of had a little grimace on his face. We could see her on the TV monitors in baseball control. Then he started to really run, and he realized he couldn't make it to second. I mean, that little snafu aside, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has been red hot for the last month and a bit, Keegan.
He has been, and you see his bat when it gets going. This is why you suffer through the tough times with Gurriel, and there will be some lapses like that. There will be days in the outfield where you watch him going just on an absolute journey. You're not sure where that journey is headed. But eventually you get to September and he goes on a hot streak. He's always been a good hitter at the end of the season when he really gets rolling. And when his swing is right, and Charlie Montoyo has even said this, you know, when he's cold, he is ice cold. But when Gurriel gets hot, he has that incredible line drive swing where he's not making a lot of ground ball contact at all. Everything is hit to that exact angle you want it. There's so much power there. You know, Gurriel, just from an athletic standpoint, is an incredibly gifted athlete when you look at strength and what he can do with the plate. So when it works, man, it works. And there will be some times where it just plain doesn't. But when he's on a streak like this, he's a guy that can change a lineup from that six or seven spot. You get Alejandro Kirk down there with him as well. There's a lot of talent, you know, beyond that top five with Springer and the four All-Stars. And that's what makes this team go from dangerous to just a little top heavy. And that's really special.
Yeah, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., I mean, he had three RBI tonight, two hits. He also scored a run with his legs. He took a walk, too. I mean, he has been phenomenal for several weeks, if not a month, and probably a little bit more at this point without looking at all the raw numbers, Keegan. But you mentioned Alejandro Kirk, and generally speaking, certainly Kirk didn't play today, but generally speaking, the bottom half of the order has been something that, you know, before, let's say, the month of August, the lack of production from the bottom of the order has been something we've all been talking about and lamenting a little bit here on Jay's Talk. But hey, I mean, Alejandro Kirk getting his first multi-homer game a little while ago. Lourdes Gurriel we're talking about here. Jake Lamb and Danny Jansen providing some decent moments in tonight's game as well, right? I mean, Jake Lamb had three RBI. Danny Jansen had a two-run jack. Let's first talk about Jake Lamb, Keegan. I mean, I don't think Lamb is... He's clearly not someone who's going to be on this roster for very, very long. But I think in terms of what you gave up for him, in terms of how he came to be on this team, acquiring him in the way they did, I should say, he has provided, you know, it got off the schneid a little bit, right? He was hitting with some bases loaded situations recently and didn't really make a huge impact. And then here we go, three RBI tonight. And without those three RBI, there's no way the Blue Jays would have won. Also made a nice grab in the bottom of the seventh on the first out by Jordan Romano. I mean, what have you made out of Jake Lamb's recent addition and his play as a Toronto Blue Jay?
Yeah, when you're without Espinal, when you're without Biggio, a few of your starting options, it's not going to be plan A, but you know, finding a guy like Jake Lamb and some of that late season roster work the Blue Jays have done, it's something you need to do if you're going to succeed late in the season. And it, you know, it reminds me, show of every spring we try to project depth options, roster depth, and remind me next spring that none of it's going to matter in a few months anyways. You know, you've got Jake Lamb playing third base. You've got Jerod Dyson off waivers from the Royals out there playing center field at times. It's amazing the turns this all takes that you don't expect eventually. But Lamb coming in is a guy who can hit right-handers, and we've seen him make some good plays defensively. Charlie Montoyo likes him on defense there. And this is what you've got to find throughout the year, because it's amazing when you go back to the 15 and 16 season, bring up those rosters and look at the names who had four or five games, a dozen at-bats. There are so many of these guys who you look at and forget, who filled in here and there. If those guys can do something instead of being a black hole in the lineup, like tonight, like you see, that's what turns a loss into a win.
I'm excited to play the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays Sporkle quiz eventually, Keegan. That's going to be, if you can get, you watch baseball more than anyone else I know. If you can get all the names on the Sporkle quiz for the 2021 Blue Jays when it's all said and done, that's going to be really impressive because.
It's amazing. There's so many names I look back and think that was Tanner Roark pitched for the Blue Jays. That was this year.
This year, yeah.
That was 2021. I have aged a decade since then, man, I tell you.
Time is a flat circle, Keegan, all right? It all melts together. It's all the same at this point. I don't know, like, today's a Saturday, apparently. I only realized that a couple hours ago as Ben and I are sitting here in baseball control. Yeah, it's been an absolutely topsy-turvy season, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon. Chatting with MLB.com's Keegan Matheson here on Jay's Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali with you until first pitch, or until a couple minutes before first pitch of game two of this doubleheader down at Camden Yards. Okay, so I mentioned the bottom of the order. We talked about Jake Lamb. Danny Jansen was the other guy I mentioned. And what, like, the catching situation for the Blue Jays is something that is so intriguing to me, because Reese McGuire has been on this roster for a lot of time this year. He has filled in, relatively speaking, admirably, right? And in pressed into action in a way you probably wouldn't have expected when Danny Jansen was injured and Kirk himself was injured. But now that all three of them are healthy, and we don't have to have the Gabby Moreno conversation because that's for a couple years down the road, more than likely. But for the three major league catchers on this roster, McGuire, Kirk, and Jansen, if you had to pick just two, I would imagine most people are taking Jansen and Kirk. But how do you think that plays out? Like, especially when you think of the DH spot, if the DH spot is going to be going to Springer more often than not, then I got to imagine, as much as you would like to have Kirk in the lineup every single day, I mean, you're going to have to split that with Jansen a little bit, I would imagine.
You do need Jansen in there. And we saw that yesterday in the Robbie Ray start with Kirk. He's still a work in progress defensively, which is what you're going to say for pretty much any 22-year-old. There are a lot of balls getting away or getting past him, and that'll clean up. We'll see how much over the next few years. But you can get him the odd DH day, and then you can work him with Robbie Ray. And Alejandro Kirk is also a really, really good bench bat on days he's not playing. That's the beauty of having Reese McGuire there. You can use Kirk pretty much anywhere, late in games, and he's a good bench bat because he makes so much contact. There's power there, but you know he's going to put a ball in play. So if you've got a guy on third, one out, and you need a ball in play, Kirk is who you want at the plate if you don't have someone you like up there right now. But Jansen's been fantastic. That's three home runs and six starts since he's been back. And you're finally starting to see a lot of these swing changes that he was optimistic about back in spring training. And the very simple version was that he was trying to eliminate any wasted movement so that when he starts his drive forward, it's all forward. What he felt before was that he was swaying a bit back, having a little bit of movement that was not powerful. He's a little more focused, a little more efficient now. And when Jansen makes contact, man, it goes. You know, he is not a power hitter. He's not hitting 40 or 50 home runs. But when he connects, it's always a no-doubter with Jansen. And he's someone the Blue Jays trust a lot behind the plate, from Ryu to the other starters. And I think we'll keep seeing more and more of him. Because credit to him, this was not a good start to a season whatsoever. And he's earned his way back.
You know, when it comes to Jansen, Keegan, I mean, we talk a lot about him being, you know, quote unquote, Ryu's personal catcher. So, as you were saying, do you think that his role will continue to get expanded beyond just being the catcher on designated Hyunjin Ryu days?
I think it has to. You know, when you try to balance out he and Kirk, and McGuire will get in there. You're not just going to let McGuire sit on the bench and watch. You know, he has earned some of his reps through this year, and he'll get the odd look as well. But I think Jansen, with every time you're putting him in the lineup, he is earning more. He's proving more to Charlie Montoya at this point, and is someone who you really trust behind the plates, you know, to manage a game, to block pitches. And Kirk still has some development there, I'm sure, just as Danny Jansen had when he was only 22 years old. And you'll see more of that, but Jansen, I think, keeps earning it. And with every outing like this, since he came back on August 31, he has looked like a healthier version of himself, even legged out a couple of things on the bases. So I think you'll continue to see a bit more of him.
Chatting with Keegan Mathison here on Jays Talk from MLB.com. All right, just a couple more for you before I let you go, Keegan. I know you got to get ready for game two of this doubleheader down at Camden. Hyunjin Ryu did not have a good game, to say the least, right? I think that's being relatively generous. Two and a third, allowed a whole bunch of hits, hard contact, runs, you name it. It wasn't sharp tonight. Hyunjin Ryu was not sharp tonight. And of course, as you might expect, not a whole lot of measured takes on Hyunjin Ryu on social media and on the text line. But
have you been on the internet show? That's terrible.
Boy. It's true. Yes. No. It's not going to be ever really that measured on the internet. And as you know, we all expect, I guess, to a certain degree. But in all seriousness, when it comes to Ryu, like, what do you expect out of Ryu the rest of the way? I feel like over his last, I don't even know at this point, maybe 10 starts, it feels like two steps forward and then one step back for Ryu. And lately, it feels like it's kind of like one step forward, two steps back. I still have faith that over the course of his contract, you will see a ton of value there. And he probably is. I mean, we know he's a bit of a mad scientist. He tinkers with the pitches. In the post-sticky stuff world, he has changed his grip and all those kinds of things. Like, we know all this about Hyunjin Ryu. But if that is still the case, if this, I'm not saying that what we got tonight is what you're always going to see about out of Ryu. But if he's going to be a teensy bit less reliable than what he is signed to be, like, what do you do about the Ryu's place in the rotation going forward? Or do you just kind of have to live with it at this point?
You know, it was a brutal start tonight. You know, there was nothing good about it. The Orioles knew what they were doing at the plate against him. They were aggressive, and all of the contact was hard. You know, Ryu was not fooling anybody whatsoever. I think there was just one whiff threw his first 50 pitches and a couple later on. It was not good. And with Ryu, my worry right now is these blow-up starts, because that's not like him. Now, if you're only going to get a 3.8 or 4.0 ERA from him, you'd like that to be a little more predictable, where he's pitching to that every time out and you have a chance. Because what he's done these last few starts, and I agree with you with the steps forward and then one back, he had a great outing last time, 6 shutout innings. He looked just fantastic. His velocity was up. Everything was good. And then he comes out tonight and looks like this. Well, what if this happens in a wild card game or game 2 of the ALDS or a game in the last week of the season when the standings are tied? You can't have that happen. You know, this is not always going to happen when this lineup comes back and scores 11 runs over 12 hours in a 7-inning game. This is not going to happen much. So I think you need a more consistent version of whatever he's going to be.
Chatting with Keegan Matheson here from MLB.com. As the Blue Jays win it 11-10 over the Orioles in game 1 of today's doubleheader. Keegan, my friend, always appreciate catching up with you. Always nice to hear your voice. We hear it very often on the post-game audio we sometimes play, but it's nice to chat with you in person for the first time in a while. Stay safe, and we'll do it again soon, my friend.
You got it, my friend. Take care, show.
There he goes. Keegan Matheson from MLB.com. As the Blue Jays again win it 11-10. We'll get to some of your texts. I'll read a couple of them right now. I see a couple. A lot of people just texting in, generally speaking, about George Springer, right? Tyler from Sarnia, Springer coming in clutch. He's been rough this year, but he has really come through when the Blue Jays need him the most. I see someone texting in. I like this one. No name on this one. I just want to make sure Josh is okay. Any hair left? I'm sure of the little Josh does have, probably not. But hey, Josh is enjoying a wonderful night off, a well-deserved night off. So good for you for texting that one in. I see Matthew in Brantford, 60% George Springer is so clutch. Can't wait to see what 100% George Springer can do for a full season in Sanity. And Fazil from Toronto, I went skydiving today, and this game one, was far more stressful. I've not been skydiving, Fazil, but I would imagine few things would be more stressful than that. But hey, I mean, I was watching the final Trey Mancini at bat as Ben called the game from the other side of the table. I was watching through my peaked hands. Like I was almost afraid to watch, but hey, the Blue Jays pulled it out. And again, you can always text us at 590-590. We'll step aside. When we come back, we'll hear some audio. I believe Danny Jansen spoke to our very own Hazel May on field, and Hyunjin Ryu will hear what he had to say to the media via an interpreter as well. That's all wrapped up, but you're listening to Jays Talk. Show Ali with you until the beginning of game 2 across the Sportsnet radio network. Welcome back to Jays Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali with you for another 6 minutes or so, as we'll make way for Ben Wagner. And at that point, he'll take you the rest of the way with the starting lineups presented by Timbermart, and he'll get you to the first pitch of game 2. Thomas Hatch and Keegan Aiken will be your starters for Toronto and Baltimore, respectively. But of course, the Blue Jays win game 1, 11-10. We're continuing to ride that roller coaster, people. Again, I hope you took the over for any of you gamblers out there on the total runs scored. And again, tons of home runs tonight. They got home runs from Vladdy Jr., Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Danny Jansen, as Keegan mentioned, homering for the third time in 6 starts since returning off the IL. But you know, after the Springer home run, the next story of this game will undoubtedly be Hyunjin Ryu, right? And of course, Charlie Montoyo as well, who I think many would argue left the vet in essentially 1 or 2 batters too many, right? The third inning itself got off to a rough start. Montoyo went out for a mound visit after the first 2 guys reached base, and predictably the very next batter slapped a few runs home, and Montoyo had to go back out there to give Ryu the hook. And I just, look, you guys know I am the first person to say hold the phone when it comes to people crushing Charlie Montoyo, because it can be tiresome. I don't love doing it, I admit, but the leash for Ryu being what it is, knowing that he was dealing with something, some kind of something, I don't really understand it, right? Like, how do you go to the mound, see that your starting pitcher has not been sharp all game long, and then maybe, I don't know if he got talked into it or what, into leaving him out there, even if it's just a nod or two from Ryu to Montoyo on the mound. Like, he's the manager. He can't be letting player, in my opinion, change his minds like that, right? Like, he has to make those decisions, and it's just, I have nothing as to why that would be the sequence of events, as to why you'd go out there thinking there's a pitching change coming and then go back to the dugout, then go back after things get even worse, right? So I think that, you know, a little bit of a head scratcher from Charlie Montoyo tonight. And the other thing too about that, it's not as though Ryu had been getting like bad luck or had been eating up to the by the BABIP machine or balls had been bouncing off of bases or players or what have you. He was getting hit and hit hard early and often. So he needed to have been hooked on like maybe one batter into the third inning. But I've said this before. I will give Charlie Montoya the credit for keeping the clubhouse grounded and being someone who is very empathetic in his managing style, if we can call it that. You know, you see the dugout being fun and you know, they're grounded, but they're also doing silly stuff. And some people have complained about that. I'm never going to complain about that. And I credit a lot of that to Charlie Montoya, especially in a season where they go from Dunedin to Buffalo to Toronto, right? So that I think is absolutely phenomenal. But at the same time, some of the head-scratching decisions from Charlie Montoya, specifically around the deployment and overall usage of Hyunjin Ryu. But the lefty did finish speaking to the media. Here's Hyunjin Ryu's availability from a couple of minutes ago via an interpreter.
When your manager, Charlie, came up to the mound there in the second inning, I guess it was, or sorry, the third, what was that conversation like? And were you lobbying to stay in and get those last outs there?
Yeah, he asked me if I could compete again and stay in, and I told him, of course I can. But as a result, it just didn't come out as well as we hoped. But overall, that's just what it is.
And then, Ryu, after the game, the way it was going, what were you thinking as you saw your team come back late, and how did it feel to see your team put that up at the end?
Yeah, as a starting pitcher in a game like this, where we have a doubleheader of two short seven-inning games, to be giving up a lot of runs earlier in the game just felt like I haven't done what I have to do. But I felt really bad for the position players and all of my teammates. But the other side, they were able to compete and fight every at-bat and get us the win.
What are your impressions of George Springer coming up in late spots?
Yeah, it was a great home run. If he can stay healthy and not be injured, he is definitely one of the best hitters out there, best position players out there. So, yeah, it was a great home run from him.
And you guys have had a couple pretty good comebacks recently. Think about the one in Oakland, the one against Boston about a month ago. These types of games at this time of year, what type of feeling does that give to the team? What does that do for you guys?
Yeah, even those games when we give up a lot of runs earlier in the game, notice that our team just never gives up. It's great to see from the players that we're trying to compete every game and try to make sure that we don't give up. We still got just under left of the season, and we just have to make sure that we stay focused and compete.
That is Hyunjin Ryu speaking to the media via an interpreter. To the Blue Jays media, of course, following this ball game. And again, Hyunjin Ryu, not sharp tonight, not sharp whatsoever. He went 2 1/3, allowing 8 hits, 7 earned runs, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. You heard him say his very first answer. He said he wasn't, when Montoya came out to the mound, what did he say to him to make him stay out there? And he basically said, I can compete. Yeah, of course. These guys are highly competitive, insanely competitive athletes. These guys are all, no one's ever going to say, yeah, coach, take me out of the game. I suck today. No one's ever going to say that. So I think Charlie Montoya, I think that's partially on him. He's got to be the one to be like, look, Ryu, you don't got it today, man. Take a seat. We'll work on this over the course of the next couple days. But either way, the Blue Jays managed to avoid disaster as they win 11-10. I mentioned earlier as well, Danny Jansen, who hit his third home run in 6 starts since coming off the injured list. He spoke to our very own Hazel May. Here's what he had to say after this roller coaster of a win.
Danny, what a dramatic come from behind win. Getting congrats from Adam Simber there. George Springer.
Wow.
Huge home run once again. What goes through your mind in that kind of situation when your teammate steps into the box?
Oh, with anybody in this lineup, we have a chance. And, you know, I've said it so many times that, you know, the resilience we have and the we're never out of baseball games. You know, we've done this so many times where we fight and we come back, and it was an amazing one.
I want to ask you about Nate Pearson. What a job to keep the bases loaded there in that sixth inning. What did you see from Nate? How did the ball look coming out of his hand?
Yeah, it was bowling ball, as always. Nate, you know, he's a bulldog, and he really showed it, and that was a huge inning for us.
What was working for him in that inning?
His fastball command and his slider, too. He's keeping the ball down, the slider down. You know, it's something that he's obviously working on, and it's coming along nice, so... it's good to just show him he's a competitor, and he did a great job.
Hyunjin Ryu, 7 earned in just 2 1/3, Danny. We've seen him pitch far better than that. What was going on with Hyunjin today?
I think it's just one of those days. You know, it's one of those days where, you know, if Ryu missed and they didn't. It was one of those days. He's an ultimate competitor as well, and, you know, he'll be ready for the next start, ready to go.
That's Danny Jansen speaking with Sportsnet's own Hazel May. It was good to hear him talk about Nate Pearson, who I think, honestly, we haven't talked about today, but he looked fantastic in his first inning of work, right? Touching 100 miles an hour at points, and he came back loading the bases. No runs will score. So I guess it's just the extension of the convo we had when talking about Julian Merriweather and Ross Stripling today as well. Just the idea that it takes these guys a few outings to get back up to speed. So here you go. Nate Pearson throwing two innings of work and allowing no runs. But that does it for the in-between version of Jays Talk. I will be back with Kevin Barker after Game 2. Of course, Kevin, our Jays Talk Baseball Central analyst here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on the Sportsnet Radio Network. But you've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links. Send hunger down to the minors and feed your wild side. Jays win the roller coaster of a game 11-10 over the Orioles. Thomas Hatch will be your Game 2 starter. Keegan Aiken will go for Baltimore. Enjoy Game 2, everyone. Welcome to Jays Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali Lee with you. Jays getting no hit through six innings of play by Keegan Aiken. And then they opened the seventh inning with a hit parade on their way to the 11-2 win. A Vladdy Jr. single, a Bo Bichette two-run Jack at a Oscar single, an Alejandro Kirk two-run bomb that had an exit velocity of 104.2 miles an hour. You can just hear Captain Kirk saying maximum velocity. They weren't done after that. Breivik Valera RBI sack fly, Marcus Semien hitting another home run, Teoscar Hernandez with a home run that sounded like a cannon going off. This is karma, people, okay? If you've ever wondered what karma looks like after Brandon Hyde chirped Robbie Ray, Fernando Abad body-checking Lourdes Gurriel Jr., you heard and watched karma live get somebody on radio and television. Maybe you don't believe in it, and who knows what the hell happens tomorrow, but for now, enjoy it because that was truly some wild stuff we saw at Camden Yards today. But let's bring in my pal Kevin Barker into this conversation, our analyst here on Jays Talk and, of course, Baseball Central on our flagship station on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Barker, I mean, that was some of the more wild games in such different ways, right? Because of the George Springer heroics at the end of the game number one and then no hitting the Blue Jays, Keegan Aiken, through six innings on their way to 11 straight runs and hits to open the seventh inning. That's crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's nuts. Again, you know, even with George Springer's not 100%, you know, if he's 75%, it's better having 75% of George Springer than 100% of somebody else. You know, just what he brings, how his at-bats are going. You know, the second game, how he started his at-bat, he wasn't as aggressive against the lefty early in the game like he normally is. You know, it's just little things like that. It's trying to set the tone. I understand that they were getting no hit through six innings, but you know, it's just that you see how they make adjustments in game at bat to at bat. And what I'm talking about is if you watch Vladdy first couple of bats, he was chasing a little bit more against the lefty than normally does. He got himself out on a pop up on a fastball in on the black. I don't want to say he chased the slider, but he was out in front or a little bit late on the slider to ground out the shortstop. And in his third at bat, you could really tell that he was making a conscious effort to stay inside the baseball, which he's not an inside out guy. He's a, you know, be short and quick and long through it. That at bat, he was just a little bit inside out trying to hit the ball to right field. You could see, you know, maybe it was they were having trouble picking him up. Maybe it was, you know, the slider was a little bit late breaking, the changeup, whatever it was, you could tell they were trying to make adjustments. And then Vladdy comes up and gets that hit. And then Bo, you could tell first at bat, he had the big giant leg kick. Third at bat, when he hit the home run, he was two strikes from 0-0. That is what you're seeing these guys evolve into is, you know, they're making adjustments to what they're seeing from a guy on the mound. And when you add talent to the way they're, you know, making all these adjustments and the way they can put barrel to baseball, it's some kind of special. Now, I've been involved in a ton of games that I'm getting no hit in the sixth or seventh inning and it takes one guy. And I've never, you know, scored 11 runs, had 11 hits in one inning. But it's just that sort of whenever the one guy gets it, that's pressure off everybody else. Now you can go up, see ball, hit ball, you simplify it, and you take off. Yeah, this is exactly what the Blue Jays are supposed to do against the Orioles. You put their foot on their neck, step on it, move on to the next day, and do it that day too.
So we started talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And of course, and Ben was talking about this on the air before, but how Vladdy laced that single to get on base and then immediately turned back to look at the dugout and started yelling like, come on, let's go, people. Yeah. And do you like, how much does that fire up guys? Like, you know, people, we talk about hitting is contagious, quote unquote. Like, is that something that really, when you can, I know you can't quantify something like that, but that has got to get people in the dugout fired up.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I just mentioned about when you're getting no hit against a guy that you're, you know, you're probably should be, annihilating baseballs. You know, Aiken had a decent day. He was changing speeds. He was pitching enough in to make the little slow slider that he had enough. I think he had some deception. He was running his pitch arm up his leg. It looked like he had a little quick arm action. Ball was getting on him. You could tell by the adjustments that Vladdy and Bo were making that they were having trouble with something, whatever that was, and you can make the adjustment. I think it was just getting that hit out of the way. Having your best hitter coming up, he broke the ice. Now everybody else can just go up and do their thing. See ball, hit ball, that thing's out of the way. We've got the no-hitter out of the way. Now it's time to run up and sort of do their thing. But that's Vladdy. You know, Vladdy's the MVP of this team. He's making a run at the MVP in the league. He does things because he has more bat speed than any human on planet Earth, that he can do the things he does from at bat to at bat. And that's what it takes down the stretch. It takes your best players to be your best players, and that's what they're getting.
Do you think if we're talking with Kevin Barker here on JStock Show Ali with you, presented by our Ontario Honda dealers, do you think that if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does manage to lead the Jays to the playoffs, even if he doesn't get the Triple Crown, I think right now he is one back of Otani, I want to say, for the home runs, leading the league in batting average. And last I checked, at least, he was like third or fourth in RBI. But if he doesn't get the Triple Crown, but the Blue Jays still make the playoffs and Otani continues to be where he's at, is it still like, is it a close AL MVP conversation for you, or is it still Otani right now?
Yeah, it's the, I mean, I don't know what your definition of close is. You know, that old saying, if you're not first, you're last.
Right.
Look, Otani's a unicorn. Like how many innings he's throwing, what's he got around, somewhere around 115 innings, you know, his ERA's what it is. He's got over 40 homers, got over 20 stolen bases. Like, we've never seen a season like that before. Vladdy would have to, you know, go 4-for-4 every single game with a couple home runs in each game for that to even be, you know, when writers are sitting down making their call, who do I check mark? Is it Otani? Oh, because Vladdy's had an unbelievable last 2 weeks of the season, maybe I check mark his name. You're probably going to go with the unicorn.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I think you're probably right. It maybe is right now not all that close, but Blue Jays fans are still getting a treat whenever they get to watch Vladimir Guerrero
Jr.
They are. Get up to the plate. All right, Barker, I want to talk a little bit with you about Hyunjin Ryu. I know this is game 2 we're following here, but game 1, Ryu was ungood, suboptimal, not very good, let's say, to use different Blairisms, let's say. Yeah, I'm not sure. Should we be worried about Hyunjin Ryu at this point? It just sometimes feels like you take, you know, earlier it was like 2 steps forward and 1 step back, and now it almost feels like it's 1 step forward, 2 steps back with Ryu.
Okay, I'll ask you a question. After his Zoom call, after his last start, when he mentioned my forearm is sore, you could have probably predicted that he may come back his next start and not have a good one. You know, he is a finish guy. He is a pronate guy with the changeup. We all know about the location, but when you're not getting finish and you're talking about forearm issues and you're talking about sore elbows and the pronate and the changeup, what do you have issues with today? He had the finish on the cutter and the pronate. Nathan of the changeup, those two things weren't there. That for me just screams, you know, if whatever the case is of maybe he doesn't want to let it go, maybe it's, you know, he's still feeling a little bit of effects of the sliders that he was throwing, whatever it was, you know, this is what you do when you're a really good team and you got the best offense in baseball. You pick your buddy up when your buddy doesn't do a good job on the mound, and that's exactly what they did today. Now, you can't make a habit out of this against better teams. You can do this against the Orioles in Camden Yard because the ball flies line to line there, and you can do special things and score a ton of runs. But should we be worried? You know, I think for me, this is sort of what you're getting used to seeing with Ryu. Is he going to take a step back? Probably. As many games and innings as he pitched in Korea, how long he's pitched over here and as many innings as he's pitched here. You know, he's a location guy. He's a feel guy. He's not a power guy. You know, he can't fastball and fastball counts throw it by guys. You know, all the things that add up to what's it going to look like when he does take a step back. Well, for me, this is sort of what you're starting to see of every single start. What's it going to look like? You know, the touch and feel, the arm speed on the changeup, which is, you know, sort of what we're not seeing now. That would tell you he's had a lot of things going on with his arm. It is what it is, right? You sort of, if he does have the feel, if he does have the location on the fastball and the cutter in, he'll be decent. If he doesn't, it'll look like it does today.
Chatting with Kevin Barker here on Jay's Talk. Show Ali with you as Jay's Talk is presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Okay, just one more for you before we let you go. We talked about Ryu, Kevin, for the game 1 starter. Thomas Hatch getting the bulk of work in game 2. His final line was 4 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, which was the home run to Mullins early on, 2 walks and 3 strikeouts. Hazel reporting that he did leave with the left hamstring injury. So I think all things considered, what you got out of Thomas Hatch, I think you take that and you run with it, certainly. I think he was more than serviceable tonight. And then Joaquim Soria, kind of a 1-2 here, Josh, or for you, Kevin. Joaquim Soria was also pretty good once again, right through an inning, allowed no hits, getting a strikeout as well. So maybe Soria creeping his way into that, I don't know, what are we going to call it? The outer circle of trust, right? Like, I don't know if he's quite yet next to maybe Adam Simber and Trevor Richards at this point, but he's on his way, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, Soria's been there and done it before. You know, you could tell the adding and subtracting, he's doing that because he doesn't have the elite fastball velocity anymore where it's, you know, here it is, see if you can hit it kind of thing. Now he has to have a little trickery. He's doing it with different arm angles. He'll do it with a little bit of crossfire now, action against the righties. He'll sort of pitch backwards. Yeah, I'm okay with him coming in the game just because he knows how to get people out. He can pitch to a hitter's weakness, which is what they don't have a ton of in the bullpen. Thomas Hatch, look, for me, him being a starter, his best pitch is a changeup. I don't really know if you could be a starter with your best pitch being a secondary pitch. That for me is, you know, what you're seeing a lot of when he comes in the game is he really can't command fastball into both sides of the plate. And when you can't do that and they can dive out over the plate, that sort of eliminates, you know, your little get me over flipping slider that he occasionally has that's non-competitive. And the changeup's really good. He's not afraid to throw it to lefties and righties, but it's just that fastball. What is it? You know, it's not very high velocity. You could tell hitters not really afraid of it. They'll let it travel a little bit more. That means they're seeing it pretty well. You know, it's could he do this against a good team? That's the question you have to ask yourself. If it's for me, you know, you're not letting him see the lineup more than one time, I'm okay with that against a good team. But if it's you're asking him to do that, you know, to 14, 15, 16 batters, say against the Red Sox, the Yankees, or the Rays, yeah, it's probably not going to look very good.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see what Thomas Hatch's place on this team is going forward for the rest of this 20-something games that are remaining in the regular season. But chatting with Kevin Barker here on Jay's Talk. Kevin, thanks for doing this tonight. We'll hear you on Baseball Central on Monday.
Okay, perfect. Have a good night, everybody.
There he goes. Kevin Barker, our analyst here on Jay's Talk. And, of course, as I mentioned, Baseball Central across the Sportsnet Radio Network. You're listening to Jay's Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali with you. We'll take a break and still some time to send us your texts, 590-590, name and location, please. I will do my level best to get to as many of them as possible on the air. We'll do that straight ahead. You're listening to Jay's Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jay's Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. What a day, huh? What a day. First of all, the Blue Jays winning game one of the doubleheader, 11-10. George Springer with some theatrics, late game heroics, whatever you want to call it. And then after getting no hit through six innings of play by Keegan Aiken, they opened the seventh inning with a hit parade on their way to the 11-2 win. Boy, I sitting here in baseball control, I got to say, hearing Ben call the George Springer home run and then, like, what, 90 minutes later hearing him call, or like 2 hours later hearing him call the Bo Bichette home run and then the Kirk home run and then the Teoscar home run and then the Marcus Semien home run. It was pretty cool. I got to say, pretty cool stuff. And, of course, the Blue Jays winning 11-2 in game two, sweeping away the doubleheader. They are now ahead 2-1 in this four-game series. Game four comes tomorrow on Sunday afternoon. First pitch will fly at 1:05 p.m. Eastern. Steven Matz will go against Zach Lowther. All right, let's get to your text, 590-590, name and location. I'll read a whole couple of them here. Ryan in Pleasantville. Ryan had texted in before to say, I know Charlie is going to get poo-pooed for the bunt, but it guarantees Springer and Semien come up with a chance to tie. Thoughts on that? And then, of course, after the hit parade, he texted in to say, WTF, this team is nuts. Wellness check for Josh. Go Jays. Josh is off today. He'll be back tomorrow. But he did text me to say, he texted me after he caught up with everything to say, holy smokes. That's what he texted me. So he clearly enjoying it today just as much as you are, all Jays fans. Mike from Angus saying, hands down, the most quote-unquote hitting is contagious team I've ever seen. What a difference from 2 weeks ago. On the West Coast, Ron on Vancouver Island says, I wonder if there's ever been a game in the history of baseball where the dugout from the losing team threw the towel in. And then, of course, on the other coast, I saw one here from Colin in Halifax. I've been a Jays fan since 1987. I've seen and heard and watched some ups and downs over the years, and today will forever be etched in my memory. What a doubleheader. Best doubleheader I can think of. Go Jays, go. You know what? That's a good point. This may, I can't exactly think of another doubleheader that like comes to mind immediately that might be quite as astonishing on the same level as this, right? And for, because again, as I mentioned to Kevin, astonishing for completely different reasons, right? For completely different reasons here. So that has been some crazy baseball today. And of course, I see here Lee in Abbotsford. I dig the 7-inning doubleheaders. Took a toll on poor Ben's voice, but hell of an entertaining day. Absolutely. 100% agreed. All right. So I'll get some more of your texts after the break. JStock is presented by our Ontario Honda dealers. Afterwards, we'll wrap up on the text line. We'll hear some Bobichette chatting with Hazel May as well. But JStock is presented by your Ontario Honda dealers across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Lynx. You're listening to JStock, presented by your Ontario Honda dealer. Show Ali with you, flying solo today. We're here for another, I shouldn't say we, I'm here for another 15 more minutes alongside Tom Young, of course, running things here from Baseball Control as we try to keep the CRTC away from us tonight. As the Blue Jays win 11-2 over the Baltimore Orioles, they sweep away the Orioles in this doubleheader. They, of course, dropped game one of this four-game series last night, so they will look to win the series tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards again. Final game of four games. Steven Matz will be on the mound for Toronto. Zach Lowther will go for the O's. A strange one today because I was preparing, I freely admit, I was preparing to talk at length about Keegan Aiken. It's funny because I think the last time Josh and I did one together, so I guess it wouldn't have been last night, even though Josh was our guest. It would have been the night before to wrap up against the Yankees. And I said on this program, I was sitting right here at this spot on the desk. I was talking with Josh and I said to myself, I want to have no part of the conversation about having the chat that Keegan Aiken did something gross to the Blue Jays. I also said Matt Harvey, but we're not going to see Matt Harvey in this series. So, you know, poo-poo on that if you want. But Keegan Aiken did just shove the Blue Jays through six innings of work today. The guy, as Ben mentioned, the guy was only two over the minimum, and they were both walks. He walked the very first batter and then walked, I believe, Randall Grichuk later on. And it looked grim. I got to say, looked pretty grim. The conversations, because I get to chat with Ben Wagner in between the innings here on JStock. And we were kind of looking at each other thinking, boy, I guess this one's going to be over early. But at the same time, not good, right? Wasn't really looking forward to JStock because I could only have imagined the text line and social media and just Blue Jays fans in general, if the Blue Jays win 11-10, 21 combined runs in the first game, and then lose 1-0 in the second one, that would have been a grim version of JStock, let me tell you. But of course, they win it 11-2. The absolute hit parade, just absolutely crazy stuff. It kind of got capped by, I guess, two major home runs. Marcus Semien hitting yet another home run. Teoscar Hernandez with a home run that sounded like a cannon going off. But it was all started, I guess, kind of, right? Because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got on base, turned around, looked at the dugout, said, come on, let's go. And it was followed immediately by a Bobichette two-run jack, an absolute no-doubter off his bat, and he was the post-game guest with Hazel May of Sportsnet. So let's hear a very short interview. Let's hear what he had to say to Hazel.
Bobichette, congratulations on home run number 23 on a 2-1 pitch, but we noticed no leg kick, so you used your two-strike approach. What was the thinking behind that?
I'm just trying to give myself the best chance to get to any pitch, so I felt comfortable doing it, and I got it.
Keegan Aiken was awfully hard on you guys. Why was he so tough in the early goings?
Yeah, he had a good fastball. He was commanding a lot of pitches. So, he did a really good job, but luckily we got to him.
Your ball club down 1-0 going to the final inning. 11 hits, 11 runs. What does that tell people about the explosiveness of this offense?
Yeah, I don't think we need to tell anybody anything. I think people know what we can do, and it was nice to do it twice today.
Well, it's Bobichette talking to the media, specifically talking to Hazel May, of course, of Sportsnet after their 11-2 win. And again, as I mentioned, he kind of got it all going with the two-run jack. Bobichette is so interesting to me. Remember when, it was certainly before the pandemic. It was right after, I guess, the Raptors won the championship in 2019. And Sportsnet had run this commercial for this, it was like a holiday dinner. I think it was kind of being pitched, I guess. And the participants in this dinner were Bobichette, Serge Ibaka, Bianca Andreescu, I believe Penny Oleksiak, and certainly Biz Nasty as well, right? And I remember Paul Bissonnette, for those who don't know who Biz Nasty is. But those guys were the participants in this dinner. And I remember even back then, I thought to myself, Bo is like one of the most quiet guys. Like, he seems to have a lot of fun in the dugout, but he never really seems to, whenever he chats with the media, like whenever it's his post-game Zoom availabilities or he's sitting in the dugout pregame talking to Hazel, or certainly postgame talking to Hazel as well, or Arash. I always felt like he's a very like understated guy. And it's funny because I've heard this from Ben before, and I've heard it from other people as well, that Bichette is one of the true clubhouse leaders for the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's interesting, right? Because he's so young. And I remember even if you go back to last season and seasons prior, when these guys were just getting called up and they're just seeing their first major stints in the major leagues, a lot of the questions we had on Jays Talk and across all the various sports radio talk topics and stations across Canada, everyone was talking about, you know, because I think Justin Smoke had departed. So everyone was kind of wondering, who are the clubhouse leaders for the Blue Jays here? Who are the leaders who are going to take stock of things when things aren't going well? And of course, things weren't going that great for the first couple months of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette's careers, right? Because things were still being rebuilt by Ross Atkins and co. But I remember that being a large part of the conversation. And it's funny because here we are in 2021, on September 11th, 2021, just a couple of minutes before the clock ticks over to the next day here on the East Coast. And Bo is one of the bona fide leaders of this team. And I think that's a really cool thing to see. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is as well. And certainly the backbone can certainly be, you can point at guys like Marcus Semien. You can point at guys like George Springer. I'm sure you can point at, to a lesser degree, Randall Grichuk. But that the young guys are becoming the leaders in that clubhouse is something that Blue Jays fans should be really excited about, because that's something you don't see very often. And I think that's going to provide, I mentioned the word backbone, that's going to be the backbone of the team. Whether or not Marcus Semien leaves, whether or not Robbie Ray, and you know, we can have different conversations about the role of pitchers in the clubhouse as well. But when it comes to the position group, position player group, I think it's absolutely phenomenal that guys like Bo and Vladdy Jr. are the leaders. But you're listening to Blue Jays Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali with you for about eight, nine more minutes here. I want to get back to the text line, 590-590. Please leave your name and location as well. I see Ken from North Bay. Ken says, one word to describe the day, wow. I also don't know if I can handle another game like today's two games. The hair on my head is getting pretty thin. Yeah, you know what? That's fair, Ken. I would like nothing more than for Steven Matz to go out there tomorrow and just shove the Orioles, for the Blue Jays to jump all over Zach Lowther early on, and for it to be a laugher from start to finish. Because yesterday was a relatively frustrating game, and we had the conversation about Julian Merriweather yesterday. And today was just, I mean, I've used the word roller coaster a lot. Today was just an absolutely wild roller coaster. And I think sometimes, I mean, look, you can never predict these kinds of things. How many times am I going to talk about variance in baseball and, you know, the room margin for error being so great, or maybe on the, I should say the opposite, actually, margin for error being so small, especially at this time of the year. And it's kind of a bummer, especially if you look at the out of town scoreboard. I think right now in the bottom of the ninth inning, the Yankees are leading the Mets 8-7. And earlier tonight, just a couple minutes ago, actually, the Boston Red Sox wrapped up an extra innings win over the White Sox, the battle of the laundry, let's call it 9-8, the Boston Red Sox taking that one. So, you know, not a ton of help after the Athletics lost to the Rangers earlier today. Not a lot of help on the out-of-town scoreboard, but hey, I mean, still bottom of the ninth, one out to go for the Mets, so maybe they can make something happen, but you never know. But either way, the Blue Jays still won their games that they were supposed to at the very least today, so that's something, I suppose. Let's get back to the text line again, 590-590, name and location. Steve from Hamilton just texting in a couple minutes ago, all caps, Placata, which is absolutely phenomenal because that's one of my favorite things the Blue Jays social media team does whenever Vladdy Jr. hits a home run. That's pretty cool. I see another one. Robert and Ajax just making the point about the wild card race. 2 weeks ago, the Jays were 6.5 out of the wild card, trailing the Mariners, Athletics, Yankees. And today, the Mariners, Athletics, and Yankees trail the Blue Jays. That's why we all play the games. It's never truly over until it's over. Let's go, Jays. We're witnessing something special with this team. And I freely admit, you guys have all heard me say it. All right? I said it on this very program, on Jays Talk, with Josh, and I think with Rob as well, in games past. I said the Jays weren't going to make the playoffs. I said that on this program. And I want to say since I jinxed, or I guess reverse jinxed the team, the Jays have only lost the one game. They have swept the Oakland. They finished off the series against the Tigers with a win. They swept the A's. They swept the Yankees. They lost the one game to the O's yesterday, and then they have won both today. So absolutely phenomenal run for the Blue Jays. Again, I see one here on the text line, Ricardo and Brampton. Not to be a buzzkill, but are we not worried about Ryu? That's kind of why I asked Barker that question. I think ultimately speaking, I'm not that worried about Ryu. You know what I mean? I'm not super worried about him. I do think it bumps him down a little bit in the order as well. I will say that much at the very least. I do think it bumps him down. Like, it's not that I think they're necessarily going to get to the point where they skip him in a rotation and give him the extra day, but that has to be a conversation they're at least having, right? But hey, I mean, Barker brought it up. Maybe we can attribute this a little bit to the tightness in his forearm, right? I mean, how many times have we have heard in this past, what now? Whenever they started cracking down on the sticky stuff, right? If you go back to that, a lot of pitchers have been talking about how they feel tightness in their forearm, right? I mean, hell, Tyler Glasnow has to have Tommy John surgery because he had to experiment with a whole bunch of ways he was gripping the baseball. And I mean, Tyler Glasnow is one of the better starters in all of Major League Baseball. And look at that, right? That happened to him. And so Hyunjin Ryu experimenting with different grips, different throws, different, you know, pitch timings, whatever you want to call it. I'm sure that contributed a little bit to it, but I'm not super worried. But it does raise the eyebrow a little bit, right? Especially because Steven Matz has been so great. Not that I don't want to jinx that guy now, but Steven Matz has been great so far, especially over his last, what, 5-6 starts, I would say. Steven Matz has been wonderful. So, Robbie Ray and Ryu weren't what we expected them to be so far in this series. So maybe I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but you're hoping for more good baseball from Steven Matz tomorrow. I see another one here from Rob in Belleville. How do you rate Valera's performance? Also, what on earth was said to that team before the seventh? I mean, you know what? If the Bobichet interview is anything to go by, clearly this team has just an I don't want to say an overabundance, but definitely an abundance of confidence, right? This team is super, super confident in themselves. They don't ever seem to get down on themselves. And again, I mean, we talked about Charlie Montoyo and some of the managerial decisions he has made in the past. I 100% credit Charlie for keeping the clubhouse the way it is basically at all times, because I think if you had a different kind of manager, I think you wouldn't necessarily get this kind of atmosphere around the team. And I think there is something to be said, even if you can't necessarily, you know, quantify it, let's say, for having the team play relaxed, even when they're getting no hit by someone like Keegan Aiken. Keegan Aiken came into this game with a 2-8 record and a 6.51 ERA, and he was no hitting the Blue Jays through six innings of play, right? It's just, it's crazy, right? It's absolutely crazy. I see a Jays tweeter here saying, great points about Vladdy and Bo, great futures ahead, will bring value to their rookie cards. So I guess you're a sports card collector. Oh, this is not, I can't tell if this is like Andy McNamara or not, because Andy loves to buy his rookie cards. So this is like an Andy Burner account. Andy, you go to bed, man. Time to go to bed. All right. I'll say this. When it comes to Semien, we were talking about Semien earlier, okay? And I know we're all tired at this point of having the Marcus Semien conversation, because at this point, like, what more is there really to be said? The guy is really good. He plays really well, right? Is he going to necessarily come close to hitting or breaking the major league record for home runs in a single season? Probably not. Probably not every single year. But when it comes to him, I think I'm at the point, I've been on the record before saying, if there is one Blue Jay you got to re-sign, it's got to be Robbie Ray, because I think position players, generally speaking, are easier to replace than aces, true aces, if that is what you believe Robbie Ray to be, right? I think that's the way I look at it. But I mean, Marcus Semien has been so phenomenal, and by all accounts, his impact on the clubhouse, as we were talking before, is also something that's hard to quantify. But even though the man is all business, you can still see him having his fun in the dugout with all the other young guys, Lourdes, Teo, Vladdy Jr., Bo, etc., Captain Kirk, right? Everyone top to bottom. Marcus Semien is absolutely a part of it. Just pay the man. Honestly, give Semien whatever it takes to make sure he remains a Blue Jay. Really, like, in all seriousness, He may be the newest version of Kawhi Leonard in the sense that he is a California native, and he may want to go back home to the West Coast and play for the Dodgers or the Angels or Padres or Giants, whoever. But given this season and how much his teammates seem to love him, I bet it is a very, very long conversation with the Blue Jays front office. And you know what? Same goes for Robbie Ray, right? I'm more confident Robbie Ray is sticking around long term because he has been absolutely phenomenal this season. The blip from last night, it feels like time has really mushed together here, but that game was just last night. I don't think anyone is super concerned about Robbie Ray, right? I'm certainly not concerned. I think he is still personally the leader in the AL Cy Young race. And hey, is it a guarantee, much like we were talking about Semien, is it a guarantee that Robbie Ray is an AL Cy Young candidate next year or every year if he signs like a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal? No, it's not a guarantee, but it's probably a pretty good shot, which is why I want to see, and I'm sure you want to see, Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray signing with the Blue Jays long-term, and I'm sure it'll happen sooner rather than later. All right, that does it for Jays Talk this evening. As I mentioned before, Josh Goldberg and I have the pregame show tomorrow at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll have Jays Talk once more after the series is over. But you've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball powered by Jack Links. send hunger down to the minors and feed your wild side. Jays annihilate the Orioles 11-2 after being no-hit through six innings. Sweep the doubleheader tomorrow with Steven Matz and Zach Lowther in the mound matchup. For Tom, Ben, Kyle, I'm Sho. Have a wonderful Saturday night, everyone. We'll wrap things up in Baltimore on Sunday.